Gold, jewellery and watches. All valuations and postage are free, trackable and insured. And on the same day we receive your items, we provide you with an offer and pay you by bank transfer in as little as 15 minutes. So visit fairgold.co.uk or text YES to 80800 free of charge from any UK mobile.
K107 weather.
Dry with sunny spells for many, some showers and wind affecting the coast, developing inland across England and Wales, but not as heavy as yesterday. A warmer day too with a high of 16 degrees Celsius.
There's no mould to being a foster carer. They're all different. Here's Myrna's story.
When my husband John and I applied to foster, we thought we might be too old. But we've been fostering for over 15 years now and we're still going strong. Watching Jack grow from a wee boy into a young man, giving him a home, stability and lots of encouragement has helped him overcome and achieve so much. He's part of the family and we're very proud of him. We're proof that you're never too old.
Could you foster a child or young person? Go to foster.fife.scot and find out more.
Mornings on K107 FM with Stagecoach. Quicker, easier, smarter with the Stagecoach app.
And so, welcome to the seventh session of the Scottish Parliament and the 22nd season of The Week in Holyrood. John Swinney wins the election, now he'll trigger IndyRef 2. Where it collapsed for Labour, we're joined by a former leader. And taken hostage, behind the scenes, at the King's Speech. Martin Fiskema and Charles Fletcher with The Week in Holyrood. 1 week after your vote, the members are being sworn in here at the Scottish Parliament. Meanwhile, unfolding in London, the future of the Prime Minister is playing out, much of it in public. Keir Starmer argues a leadership debate will paralyse his government. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, says Labour should not plunge the country into chaos by holding a leadership contest now. Her message comes after the latest GDP figures show the economy grew by 0.6% in the first quarter of 26.
Today's numbers show that the economy is growing strongly, and because of that growth, we'll be able to do more to invest in our public services and to support families and businesses with the cost of living. But that is only possible because of the economic stability that we have brought back to our economy. And we shouldn't put that at risk by plunging the country into chaos at a time when there is conflict in the world, but also at a time when our plan to grow the economy is starting to bear fruit.
Incoming First Minister John Swinney says the current Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, pledged talks on holding IndyRef 2. Downing Street has twice denied that, but John Swinney is holding firm.
There has now been a pro-independence majority in the Scottish Parliament for four elections in a row. This mandate has been ignored by successive Westminster Prime Ministers, Labour and Tory, year after year after year. I had hoped in this election we could break the logjam by securing the only thing that has previously actually secured a vote, which was an SNP majority. Although we've come very close to achieving that, that SNP majority has not been accomplished. But that does not change the underlying fact that despite all the attempts to stop us, for the fourth election in a row, there is a pro-independence mandate in the new Scottish Parliament. Indeed, there are now more pro-independence MSPs than at any time in the history of the Scottish Parliament. The way forward on this must be made in Scotland. The results across the UK made clear why the need for independence is so urgent. Nigel Farage is now galloping towards Downing Street, and the prospect of a reform-led government is more likely than not. The UK may well soon have a Prime Minister who is openly hostile to minority groups, who has called for the privatisation of the NHS and the abolition of the Scottish Parliament. It is vital that we unite in Scotland to ensure our Parliament is fully Farage-proofed. That means having the power before 2029 to decide our own constitutional future without Farage being able to block us. The alternative future for Scotland is as an independent country with the greater security and prosperity offered by EU membership and making our vast energy wealth work for the people of Scotland. I will have more to say on the way forward on independence in the coming days and weeks. But let me make one final reflection in my comments today. After Thursday's elections, there are now set to be First Ministers in Wales, Northern Ireland and in Scotland, all committed to fundamental constitutional change. If Westminster has not yet grasped the significance of this moment, then it certainly will come to appreciate it in the weeks and the months ahead, believe me. Because the direction of travel is clear. What people in London like to refer to, rather patronisingly, as the Celtic fringe, is very much about to become centre stage.
We're seeing the biggest change in the makeup of Holyrood since Parliament was reconvened in 1999. There are many more new members this time around, and over the week they've been going through induction programmes here. That's not like being chipped for Parliament. It's all about logging on to your new email address, getting your picture for your parliamentary pass, and trying to navigate your way around this place. Here to welcome them is the outgoing presiding officer, Alison Johnston.
Every session, the induction programme has got more comprehensive, making sure that members have all the information they need to be as effective as possible. They are expecting me in the chamber just now, so I'd better get in and welcome them all.
And in their first act, members have voted for the presiding officer to take them through session 7. There were 3 rounds of voting, and Kenny Gibson, formerly SNP and now with no party affiliation, has been elected presiding officer.
I want to thank every one of you who participated in this process. Belated congratulations if I haven't spoken to you already about winning your election. And thanks to all those who voted for me through thick and thin. It has been quite a stressful afternoon, as you can imagine. But I'm looking forward to working with every single person in this chamber to take this Parliament forward. I think there's so much more we can be as a Parliament than we have been in the past, and I'm certainly going to do my utmost to work with you in taking us forward.
And on Tuesday, members will elect the First Minister. That'll be John Swinney, who was the first to take the oath at the swearing-in ceremony in the chamber.
The primary loyalty of the Scottish National Party is to the people of Scotland, in line with the constitutional principle of the sovereignty of the people.
Please raise your right hand. I, John Ramsay Swinney,
I, John Ramsay Swinney,
do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance.
Do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance.
To His Majesty King Charles, his heirs and successors according to law.
To His Majesty King Charles, his heirs and his successors according to law.
So help me God.
So help me God.
But before we go further, let's reflect on the election campaign. John Swinney said his ambition was a majority of SNP members. He didn't get that. Anas Sarwar spent a fortune on social media and claimed he'd win. He didn't. Russell Finlay was once the lead opposition here. He isn't now. The Greens said they'd make gains, and they did. Alex Cole-Hamilton said he'd have more Lib Dems in the chamber. He has. And Reformed UK has a pride of 17 members of the Scottish Parliament. Their leader, Malcolm Offord, is already targeting the next Scottish election. He says that's the one where he becomes First Minister. Here's a week of 60 Seconds Scotland. It's Monday the 4th of May. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland. The campaign's in its final days and we've got whisky galore. US President Donald Trump has removed tariffs.
I just took all the restrictions off so Scotland and Kentucky can start dealing again. And I did it in honour of the King and Queen who just left.
John Swinney is claiming victory.
The proposition that I advanced to the President when I met him in the Oval Office of the link between Scotland and Kentucky is what's got this deal over the line.
The Lib Dems and the Greens are warning Donald Trump could change his mind at any stage. Russell Finlay is out to pull a surprise at the polls.
I love Scotland and I despair at the damage being inflicted by the SNP.
But so is Anas Sarwar.
I get that you're scurred with politics, but it doesn't have to be like this. I will fix our NHS, make life more affordable and give all our children the chance to succeed.
I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland from Caledonia Media. More later. It's Tuesday the 5th of May. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland. The SNP's Westminster leader Stephen Flynn is warning the UK is facing a constitutional shock in the election.
The Westminster establishment, I'm afraid, aren't quite ready or aware of what is about to happen.
Alex Cole-Hamilton of the Lib Dems claims the SNP has lost the plot on Scotland's ferries.
This is a crisis and yet the SNP are asleep at the wheel.
You vote this week. Next week, MSPs vote to elect the new First Minister. Conservative Russell Findlay knows what he'll do.
What I've said and all I'm going to say is I will not back an SNP First Minister, an SNP government.
And John Sweeney reveals he was at Calder's Garden Centre in Kirkintilloch with friends and colleagues when the US President Donald Trump called him directly to say he was cutting whiskey tariffs.
So he quite literally started the conversation saying, "Hello John, how's things?"
I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland from Caledonia Media. More later. It's Wednesday the 6th of May. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland on the last day of campaigning for election 26. It's all to play for across the country for parties and independents, including Fergus Ewing.
Promises have been made and broken for 11 years to give the Highlands better, safer dual roads, the A9 and A96. They've been broken.
Malcolm Offord for Reform UK believes the undecided will determine the outcome.
There's a big number of undecided voters still in the last 48 hours. That is the opportunity for Reform UK.
Labour's Anas Sarwar says the NHS is broken, but he can fix it.
I know how important the NHS is to so many people, not just the great people that work in it, but the people that rely on it every single day.
The SNP's John Swinney says his steady, strong leadership is vital for Scotland now.
That's what the SNP offers positively.
Polling stations open across Scotland at 7 o'clock tomorrow. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland from Caledonia Media. More later. It's Thursday the 7th of May. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland on Election Day. The polling stations are open across the country from the Highlands and Islands to the English Channel. Across Scotland, our focus is on votes for the Scottish Parliament. In England, it's for local authorities and mayors. And in Wales, it's also a national vote for the Welsh Parliament. Voting is underway nationwide until 10 o'clock tonight. And in Scotland, the traditional overnight count will instead begin at a sensible time tomorrow morning. The first real result is anticipated from Airdrie around midday tomorrow. Then there should be a steady flow right across the country, giving us, hopefully, a clear vision of what you decide today. How you vote will help to shape the incoming government at Holyrood, and the new members are expected to have their vote a week today to elect our next First Minister. Don't just hope, vote. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland from Caledonia Media. More later. It's Friday the 8th of May. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland. The campaign is over. The counting is underway throughout today and the result will reflect your choices right across the country. Did you give John Swinney the majority he craves or did you help Anas Sarwar deliver the biggest political shock of the campaign? Voting's also been going on across England and Wales. Plaid Cymru is anticipated to rout Labour at the Welsh Parliament. And what of Reform north and south of the border? Did they talk a big game and did the media fall for it? Or is Reform about to make a significant impression in England and Scotland? Here, Alex Cole-Hamilton turned out in a dandy peach-coloured suit as he tried to persuade you to love the Lib Dems on your peach paper. The Tories were also after that vote, but Russell Findlay was sensibly dressed for the weather. The Greens hope to topple the SNP in Edinburgh Central. Fergus Ewing is keen to retain Inverness and Nairn. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland from Caledonia Media. More later. It's Saturday the 9th of May. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland. The results. It's a crushing election defeat for Labour and a victory for John Swinney and the SNP, their fifth successive win.
Now, the Labour government has just been hammered in Scotland and I hope that lesson is learnt in Downing Street, that there's now got to be respect for the Scottish government.
Anas Sarwar says Labour failed.
And my party is hurting today. And it's my job to hold it together.
The former Culture Secretary is now also former MSP Angus Robertson. He lost his Edinburgh Central seat to Lorna Slater of the Greens. Jackson Carlow is out, squeezed by Reform, who've made gains right across the UK and secured members at Holyrood. The Lib Dems made gains and Jackie Bailey held on to Dumbarton, more than doubling her majority.
The reality is it's a disappointing result over the course of the day for Scottish Labour.
Only Jackie Bailey and John Swinney are the original members from the 1990s. Intake. I'm Charles Fletcher with 60 Seconds Scotland from Caledonia Media. More later. Back to the here and now, and while we are preparing for the upcoming session at Holyrood, almighty chaos is playing out at Westminster. It all circles the Prime Minister, and there may be challenges to his leadership of Labour and therefore his premiership of the country. Keir Starmer is under enormous pressure, but one policy, perhaps too often forgotten in all the commentary, is his opposition of Donald Trump's war in the Middle East. He refused to join it. That resonates well on doorsteps across the country. When you hear this programme, things may have moved on substantially, of course, but at this moment in time, in the studio here at Holyrood, this is the news. Friends and allies of the Westminster Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, suggest he'll challenge the Prime Minister for leadership of UK Labour. The Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, is keen to run, but he's not an MP, so he can't. Former Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner may run if there's a contest, which leaves the incoming Scottish Government lots of legroom to say the Labour Party can even manage a coup, let alone the country. There have been 8 Prime Ministers in the UK in the past 20 years, 6 of them in the past 7 years. This week, MPs have been debating the King's speech.
An increasingly dangerous and volatile world threatens the United Kingdom. My ministers will introduce legislation to take advantage of new trading opportunities, including a bill to strengthen ties with the European Union. Legislation will be introduced to increase confidence in the security of the immigration and asylum systems. My Lords and members of the House of Commons, other measures will be laid before you.
King Charles confirmed the UK government has committed itself to no new oil and gas licences in the North Sea. That's a move likely to hit support for Labour at the Aberdeen South by-election, triggered by Stephen Flynn being elected to Holyrood last week. He's leaving Westminster to sit here instead. Also moving to Holyrood is Stephen Gethin's. His election has triggered another by-election, this time in the constituency of Arbroath and Broughty Ferry. We join Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch in the Commons.
This is a highly unusual moment. The Prime Minister is in office but not in power. Everyone is trying to pretend it's all right. It's not all right. In the past 48 hours, nearly 100 Labour MPs have called for the Prime Minister to resign. 4 ministers have quit. It is clear his authority has gone, and that he will not be able to deliver what little there is in this King's speech. This is a government less than 2 years in office, which has already run out of ideas and run out of road. So how did we get here? There is a great line in the musical Hamilton, Mr. Speaker. Winning is easy, governing is harder. Everything that has gone wrong in Labour's first 2 years comes back to one problem. They came into office with no plan. They did not understand the difference between winning an election and governing a country. This is a man who, faced with a crisis of vision, charisma and electoral success, sent for Gordon Brown. Leadership, Mr. Speaker, is about having a vision for this country. It's about having the courage to take difficult decisions, persuading your party that those difficult decisions will pay off in time, and taking responsibility for your mistakes. He has failed on every count. We've had pillars, promises, 4-point plans, 5-point plans, missions, none of it achieving anything. Reset after reset after reset. Even if the Prime Minister does last long enough in office to deliver this gracious speech, the bills announced today do not remotely come close to what the country needs. I know that they're chuntering, Mr. Speaker. Not a single one of them actually dares to intervene on me in this speech. I do, Mr. Speaker, however, want to welcome, the government's ongoing support to Ukraine and its commitment to NATO. Even worse, Mr. Speaker, is what isn't in the gracious speech. There's no point in him giving me dirty looks. We all know what he's been up to. We all know. Even worse, Mr. Speaker, is what isn't in the gracious speech. There is no defence readiness bill because apparently it isn't ready. Where are the plans for welfare reform? There are none because Labour MPs blocked them. Where is the plan to make savings? There isn't one because Labour don't know how to make savings. They only know how to spend money, other people's money. Where is the plan to support businesses? There isn't one, because they don't understand that it is business that creates growth, not government. They have no answers to what really matters, the problems that must be solved to get Britain working again. Now, Mr. Speaker, I will say that I do feel very sorry for Labour backbenchers. I do. They arrived here, not that, it's true, I do feel sorry for Labour backbenchers, I do. They arrived here not that long ago with such high hopes. Some of them, in fact, were so talented, they were made ministers before ever speaking a word in Parliament. So talented. Although one of them has just resigned. I mustn't forget that. One of them has just resigned. We have watched, Mr. Speaker, their growing horror, day after day, week after week, as this hope descended into total chaos. The dread as they are sent out yet again to defend the indefensible. The injustice at feeling like pariahs in their own constituencies. Banned from pubs, banned from hairdressers, which is presumably why all the women on the front bench have the same hairstyle. The realisation, Mr. Speaker, that their legacy is just going to be... Now, I wasn't... They can complain as much as they like. I wasn't expecting this to be comfortable for them. They're the ones who are trying to unseat their Prime Minister. They should face that. The realisation, Mr. Speaker, that their legacy is just going to be breakfast clubs and Peter Mandelson. Labour MPs have been treated as disposable by their leadership. Sacked for backing the two-child benefit cap, sacked for opposing welfare changes, sacked for supporting farmers. The Prime Minister then U-turned on all of them. It must be tough when you take a principled stand and have the whip removed only for the government to confirm 6 months later that they agreed with you all along. It is no wonder, Mr. Speaker, that nearly 100 Labour MPs have now called for the Prime Minister to go. I know that there's another 100 who claim to be supporting him, although some of them didn't even know that their names were on that list. When you can only get a quarter of your MPs to publicly back you, the game is up. And so the starting gun for the Labour leadership contest has been fired. So let's have a look at the runners and riders. We have the former Deputy Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, who has given up vaping. She's not here. She's given up vaping, but still hasn't paid her taxes. We have the Health Secretary, who accidentally sent his takeover plans to Number 10, almost as incompetent as leaving them on the photocopier. And we have, Mr. Speaker, the Mayor of Manchester. The Mayor of Manchester, Mr. Speaker, a self-proclaimed winner, who has twice failed to win the Labour leadership, including against the member for Islington North. As one Labour MP said about all the candidates in this race, and I quote, "We have to face up to the fact every single one of them is," I apologise, Mr. Speaker, "F star, 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 useless." I do feel sorry for the poor Labour MPs who will now be subjected to months of peacocking by leadership candidates while the country is not being governed. I have some advice for whichever of them eventually takes over. Getting to Number 10 is not an award for being in a game show. This is not Strictly Come Dancing, and despite appearances, it's not Traitors either. If you are a housing secretary who can't work out her housing taxes, if you are a health secretary who can only cut waiting lists by deleting names from the waiting list, if you are Gordon Brown's former chief secretary to the Treasury and you think the bond markets are a hoax, I can assure you that being Prime Minister is going to be a lot tougher. Too many have failed because they thought winning an election or a leadership contest was the success. It is not. The work doesn't end when you get the job. That's when it starts. It is absolutely preposterous that the government is here laying out a programme as its ministers are resigning and a large proportion of the party is saying that the Prime Minister needs to go. The whole thing is totally illogical. Either Labour MPs agree with this agenda, in which case, why are they trying to get rid of the Prime Minister? Or they don't agree with this agenda, in which case, what on earth are we all doing here? Yeah. It is time to be brutally honest, Mr. Speaker. It is time to be brutally honest. The country is angry with the entire political class, all of us here. They are not happy with how we have been doing politics. It is time to get serious. Time and again, I have offered the Prime Minister support to pass difficult legislation. Time and again, I have offered the Prime Minister support to pass difficult legislation. Time and again, he has turned it down. It might be too late for him now, but it's not too late for his successor. It is time to get serious. It is time to deliver. That is what the British public expect. That is what the Conservative Party will do.
I now call the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, can I say what a pleasure it is to welcome the gracious speech of His Majesty and the radical agenda of this Labour government that will tear down the status quo that has failed working people and build a stronger, fairer Britain. Mr. Speaker, let me also thank the Leader of the Opposition for the usual warm and generous nature of her contribution. In difficult days, her input is always a ray of sunshine. I particularly getting tips from her on how to win friends. This is from the person, Mr. Speaker, who previously called us orcs and goons. But, Mr. Speaker, I am a gooner, and so, as usual, she is less than half right. But we do have one thing in common. Our parties both had tough results in the local elections last week. The difference is, she hasn't noticed. And, Mr. Speaker, there's another difference, Mr. Speaker. We are in government and they are no longer even the opposition. Mr. Speaker, this King's speech is a strike against the status quo that has failed working people. It's a King's speech for the young people whose gifts lie in their hands, who work hard, want their talents to be recognised and just want an opportunity in their community. A King's speech for the children who, under the party opposite, had to go to school without breakfast, hungry, cold and tired, when they should be focused on their learning. And, Mr. Speaker, it's a King's speech for the backbone of this country, for working people who worry about the cost of living, want their town centres to thrive, their public services to work, their government to be on their side. And, Mr. Speaker, we are, because the heart of this programme is a plan to make Britain stronger and Britain fairer. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, right now across the country, people turn on their television and they see bombs falling. They go to the petrol station and see prices rising. And they're worried sick about the consequences. We cannot stand here in this house and pretend that this is new. Britain has been buffeted by crises for decades now. The 2008 financial crash, the austerity that followed it, Brexit, COVID, and the war that still rages in Ukraine. We are going to declare Britain's energy independence. That does not mean, and it will not mean, that we turn off the taps in the North Sea. Oil and gas will be part of the mix for decades. But we have to move so much faster on clean energy, a whole society effort, everyone playing their part, as we take control of our energy security. And, Mr. Speaker, I will.
I'm very grateful to the Prime Minister for giving way. He talks about energy security, and he should know that Scotland currently exists in a state of energy surplus. We generate more electricity than we use, and he should know that under conditions of surplus, prices go down. But in Scotland, because we have to be stuck in the GB energy market, we pay for the scarcity of energy in England. But not just to the equal, to the detriment, higher prices for energy in Scotland. Can he explain why that dysfunction exists and what's in this King's speech to fix it?
Well, what's in this King's Speech to fix it is moving faster to our energy independence. That is the way that we get off the international markets. That is the way that we take control and reduce bills for people across the country. Mr Speaker, we will, of course, also strengthen our country's defence security. That starts with the fundamentals and a recognition that it is not in the interests of this country to rush into a war without any thought of the consequences. That is my position. That has always been my position, regardless of the pressure. A test of judgment which some in this House have failed. It continues, Mr Speaker, with our commitment to NATO, the most successful defensive alliance in history. A proud achievement of this party that others would throw away. Today, faced with even greater threats, we need to strengthen NATO, we need to invest in our defence capabilities, and we need to strengthen the European element of NATO, because this nation is stronger when it stands with others, not just in word, but in deed. We are prepared to lead from the front, to bring nations together in this moment of danger, to support Ukraine, including through the coalition of the willing, and to act with our allies to reassure shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. Because, Mr Speaker, we're not merely content to manage the fallout of the Iran crisis. Instead, we're building an international effort to solve it and end the economic harm.
You're listening to The Week in Holyrood with Charles Fletcher, and still ahead, what went wrong for Labour at the Scottish election? And behind the scenes at the King's Speech, we hear from a hostage. It's been a rumbled election for Scottish Labour. Its leader, Anna Sawa, ran a campaign of confidence that he would win and become First Minister. Instead, Labour is tied for second place with Reformed UK, both parties having 17 members elected here. That's the first time this has happened, and it'll make for interesting seating arrangements at the Parliament and who gets the first question at FMQs. Joining me live is former Scottish Labour leader Joanne Lamond. Joanne, what went wrong for Scottish Labour?
People who are more involved in the campaign will be, as we speak, examining all the different issues around what went wrong. But it did go wrong, and I was reflecting on some of, just as an observer really, some of the challenges for Labour in Scotland. One thing that struck me was, I heard somebody describing in the past that election campaigns, you either have a message of, as an incumbent, don't take risks, stick with what you know, or if you want to win and you're not an incumbent, you have a change of message. And quite remarkably, considering the SNP have been in as long as they have done, they managed both to create the impression that, yes, obviously they had a record, although they didn't talk much about the record, but that sense of that, you know, John Swinney had been there and was, you know, a serious figure and so on, but they also had a change message. And this is the challenge. The SNP will always have a change message because it's always just over the horizon. The idea that independence, so they can, the notion of independence gives them a constant sense of being a party of change, even though it's never secured and it's never really described. But it's also an alibi, because he's able to say, or was able to say, well, yes, some things were difficult, but look, it was that bad lockdown in Westminster that caused the problem. So that is that's a huge dilemma, I think, for Scottish Labour, or for anybody who wants a kind of a serious political debate. There's a bit of me thinks that Swinney was able to almost pull off a bit of what happened with John Major in 92, which was that although everybody had come to the point where, you know, the Tories and Thatcher were poisonous electorally, he was able to say, well, I'm the new guy. And John Swinney, despite the fact he's been at the very heart of that, at the SNP for all of the time that they were there, and there was, but because there was so much chaos before him, because he wasn't falling over and causing mayhem, he was able to present himself as new and solid and reliable. So that in itself was a huge challenge. But I actually think and this is a bigger challenge again for Labour, that if you want to see this, you want change, you need to see what it looks like and what it feels like. And for Labour, the change is about people's everyday lives. I think it's about how we support people who are carers. It's about how we educate our children. It's how you create jobs that are secure and not exploitative. But all of these big changes don't really lend themselves well to being stuck in a pledge card. And unless we're able to stop, I view politics just now as infantilising. And it's difficult to be the person who says, I don't want to engage in this, you know, flinging slogans at each other and throwing goodies at people. It's difficult in a climate where basically that's what politics has become. It's become frenetic and kind of missing the main point about actually wanting to change people's lives in a real way rather than a theoretical way. You know, the actual result is not a surprise in the way that, you know, for a lot of people, I mean, I was an election agent in the only non-Labour marginal seat that we won in 92 in Scotland, and that was when Ian Davidson beat Jim Sillars. And I was up on the stage. And, of course, in those days, the election agent stood with the candidates. And friends had been watching the result coming in and were absolutely convinced that we had lost Govan because I looked as if just utterly devastated. But it was because just before I went on, I was told that we had lost Basildon. Basildon, I think, was the seat that was going to indicate whether there was any chance of winning at a UK level.
Yeah, the bellwether.
So it's very raw. But, you know, the result for the SNP is also, it's not an emphatic result. It's almost about the way the thing election plays out. But you have to deal with the system as it is. We know that people who vote in constitutional lines, that vote was on the those who want to stay in the United Kingdom was divided. And that, you know, and for example, the Greens don't run in every constituency. There's all sorts of things. Some interesting things, and you'll know more about this than me, but I read that there was more SNP voters who went to reform than Labour voters who went to reform. So it's a very intriguing mix. And, of course, once the election's over, the victor, the spoils, they can re-describe what that verdict is as they like, in a sense. But I think there's an awful lot more going on than the SNP would want us to pretend. But it is, I find it very worrying that if the message the SNP get is, if we just keep doing politics this way, we can be in power forever, rather than really having a sense that actually there's something much more serious needs to go on here. Because I was very struck by the fact that John Swinney, people had really taken a view that they were going to win. We might think it's remarkable that they were going to win, but they were going to win. But he chose not to have a serious conversation with people about what he would do about the fiscal black hole, what would he do about education. Instead, he just reverted to thinking of things, you know, that somehow it's almost like, you know, the inducements you get to buy stuff, or you can get this free thing or that free thing, or you can get a free Amazon card or whatever it might be. And I found, in a sense, if there's going to be a serious debate, we have to ask the governing party to be part of that serious debate about, and just stop that. I mean, I found the, forgive me for sounding so exasperated, but I found the offer on the free bag of stuff for primary one children being badged as every child should have the same start in life, as if the gap in our education system and our life chances is about not having the right pencils to go to school, when it's everything else but that can create the lack of opportunity for young people. And to encourage people to believe that we're in the middle of a cost of living crisis and he's going to go off and sort out the supermarkets and make food cheaper, but which by any estimate, even if it could be done, will involve years of work. And so it's not addressing the immediate crisis. And it's almost playing on what somebody's concerned about, pretending there's a solution and not actually engaging in, well, you know, if we're in serious business, we've got spending choices to make and we're going to spend it on that and we're going to do stuff that you know, it doesn't look like you're wrapped up in a ribbon for you, but we can promise it's going to make a difference to your life and the lives of your children and your elderly parents or whoever it would be.
This is a serious time now for Anna Sarwar and Jackie Bailey because they were coming across in many senses as running a very strong campaign, coming forward with messages about education, about the NHS. What do they need to sit down and do now?
They don't need to take advice from me. So that's the first thing. And I know that they're very engaged and will be very serious about what were the things that worked. What more than just saying that it was they wanted change, what would that change look like and what did they need to do to get that change? And I think that's part of it. I think there will be a temptation, as there always is in all political parties, to look to external problems. There is absolutely no doubt whatsoever that our leader at UK level in Westminster, Keir Starmer, was coming up in the doors and that was a problem. But that's a comfortable place to go to say that was what the problem is. We can accept that that was a problem, but it wasn't the only problem. And I think there needs to be time taken to think about what were the things. And people say that, you know, it was that, you know, to target 38 seats was too much. What you have to remember is, and again, this is very similar to 2010, that in 2010 in Scotland, Labour did very well. And we took from that that people were coming back to the Labour Party and we were slaughtered in 2011. So in 2000, in the last general election, there is no doubt that people thought, and I did too, this was a great opportunity, it's a sense that people were going to put their trust in Labour again and there was an opportunity for us at the Scottish elections. But what we just have to accept is that people make different judgments at in different electoral contexts. In different contests. And while they were willing to vote Labour in 2024, they didn't seem to have this. There was not that same shift at the Holyrood election. So people need to look at what were people hearing as much as what Labour was saying. What were we offering on education? And I mean, education is a matter of grave concern to me because I think that what is happening in our schools then has a massive impact on the capacity for young people to go on to further and higher education. I think we're seeing a hollowing out of further education. That gravely concerns me because second chance education, the kind of training and skills and so on, is the danger that's lost. We know that young people have not come back to school post-COVID. And if they do and their behaviour is poorer, schools are under pressure. In some areas, the timetable is narrowing and so on. Very difficult to find teachers. Huge shortages in certain subjects, and that's all been masked. So whatever discussions are going on about how do we do things differently, the only thing I could say is that these are, you know, the people, Jackie and Bailey and Asarwa, understand policy, particularly in the health service. You know, hear Anas talking about the health service. He cares passionately about it, but it has to be more than, I really care about this. Because anyone who comes in contact with the health service at the moment will meet a lot of very good professional people doing their very best, but it's a system that's really, really, really it's on its knees, again, post-COVID. So I guess I think part of what I think any politician should be doing now is going back to thinking, what was the impact of COVID on services, but also what did COVID reveal about our society? Because we know that with COVID, if you were poorer, you paid a heavier price in terms of your health, but you also paid, your children paid a heavier price in terms of accessing education. And anybody living in a house that was with not a lot of space and without a garden, without resources, without Wi-Fi, would have been hugely impacted. So it's a huge social justice and economic disadvantage issue for me. And I just think that people, that is a place that we should have been anyway across party. And I would just hope that they play a part. In the next period, we can think, how does Labour do better electorally? But there's a bigger challenge, I think, which is, how does our political system do better in these times? I'm gravely concerned the Scottish Parliament just becomes a kind of a circus. And one thing that an Anas and Jackie can do as parliamentarians is ensure that from the Labour's perspective, people are taking their job seriously. If you're on a committee, you do your job properly. The committee is not a platform, it's a workplace, and they need to be serious. And legislation is not about emoting about how much you care about stuff, it's about actually making people's lives better. The last Parliament was bad enough about telling everybody how much you cared about stuff and not really bothering about whether what you were then doing made any difference or indeed perhaps made things worse.
It's a very easy solution or outcome after an election like this for people to say, change the leader. Should the leader be changed?
I certainly don't think that Anas Sarwar should go. I think an argument, you have to have an honest argument about what went wrong, what went well, what do we need to do better. But part of it is, I mean, footballing analogies are very dangerous things, but people are always wanting to change a football manager. But sometimes it's not, and for leaders, you have to decide, am I the problem? Am I standing in the road of things changing and getting better and improving? Or is it the fact that there's something deeper in the structure around about you that's causing the difficulties? And I certainly think that in Scotland at this time, the challenge is, as I've already said, about dealing with a political party which can present itself as change because of the independence question and will always offer an alibi to poor governance because they didn't get that independence. That requires just simply people getting, you know, people to be serious about the politics of it. And I think Anas has a fundamental job to do in as a parliamentarian and as a Labour parliamentarian in the Parliament. So to me, the issues are so serious in Scottish politics that changing the leader is not... to me, that would become a diversion and a distraction from what really has to happen now.
Talking then of diversions and distractions, what are you making of the goings-on in Westminster surrounding Keir Starmer?
Well, really, you thought, you know, and it's something about our society that everything seems to be at twice the speed of anything before. Maybe it's because I can remember a long time ago being the constituency secretary who had to write to somebody to tell them that they had been expelled from the local constituency. Well, probably it took the time I came home from the meeting, drafted up a letter, typed up a letter, got the letter posted. I mean, it's a couple of days before anything happened. Now everything happens so quickly. And in all walks of life, you know, I mentioned football, everybody's kind of agitated and getting, you know, hyperventilating about everything constantly. I think it's most unfair of Scottish football at this time to be the very time precisely where it's all totally frenetic as the same time as politics. They're not thinking of my well-being at all in that regard. But I think I worry in Westminster there are serious questions about, for the leadership and for the leader himself, about whether he's part of the solution or part of the problem. And what seems to be said is that there has to be a judgment call as it cannot be pulled back. It seems to me that, you know, that for a lot of people, they've just simply decided however good he is and however decent he is and however smart he is, that he has not won people over. But, you know, and I'm not talking about the membership of the party, I'm talking about in the country. It's very hard to see how you pull back from that. But however that discussion is conducted, it cannot look like people just playing games with each other. The mission that they've got, the purpose they've got, the privilege they have of being in a position of power needs to be the thing that comes over strongest. So people look as if they're looking to their own ambitions and if I just wait another minute and someday else, if we hold back here, the message, all of that might be entirely rational internal conversation, but the message to the outside world is, we told you there's a problem here and your solution is to start, you know, playing games amongst yourselves.
Joanne Lamont, thank you for joining me on The Week in Holyrood. A pleasure as ever to hear from you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Now, running for election is a choice. It's one that often requires an understanding partner and family. John Swinney says he couldn't do the job as First Minister without the support of his wife and teenage son. Joining me now is one of the returning members, Jenny Minto, who's been re-elected in Argyll and Bute.
I feel very privileged. I think that's the word that always comes to mind. When I was elected 5 years ago, it was that overwhelming feeling that people were putting their trust in you. And for that to be renewed it's unbelievable, actually. I'm very touched and very excited as well. Last time I was very daunted. In some respects, I still am, because you just never know what's going to happen each day. But I have an overwhelming feeling of thankfulness as well, I suppose, because I've really enjoyed it. I love Argyll and Bute. I love Scotland. And I'm very focused on doing my best for both Argyll and Bute and for Scotland. And that's just in my being. You know, I qualified as a chartered accountant in the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Scotland. I was brought up, my parents brought me up, knowing a lot about Scottish history, not everything, but also respectful of other people and other people's views. And I think that's my modus operandi. I think I need to put people first, but I also put my belief in Scotland very high up my list of priorities.
You certainly do put people first. And I recall one day in the chamber where you were quite dismayed by reaction around you during a debate, and you were quite moved. And I think that was a refreshing show of honesty and of feeling, which sometimes is not conveyed in the chamber.
Yes, I am thinking you're referencing the debate in December on gender identity healthcare. Yeah, I think I have never gone into the chamber forgetting about the people I am there to represent. Now, whether that's when I was a backbencher and that was purely people in Argyll and Bute, but when in that specific debate, I was thinking about people that I know personally, people that I have met in the previous 3 years of me being in this role, and thinking about how I would feel if it was a relation of mine that was having to listen to some of the stuff that was being said in that chamber.
And what about that elusive referendum? Is that coming up?
Oh, well. So you will have been watching as much as I have all the shenanigans that are going down in Westminster just now.
Quiet down there today, I think.
I had a wee laugh to myself reading some of the letters of resignation from ministers, and I think I wonder who Mr. Swinney will be meeting with to have that conversation, because I believe that the shenanigans that are going down on just now in Westminster are possibly one of the biggest arguments that we have to say, actually, we are going through a very measured work in the Scottish Parliament just now, putting people of Scotland at their focus of the decisions we make, whether it comes to the cost of living, whether it's restructuring our public services, but they are all focused on people and the people of Scotland. And that's what we need to lead on. And I think John will have many, many, many items in his bag to speak to whoever is the Prime Minister down south.
Thank you very much for joining me on the Weekend Holiday. A pleasure to have you on the programme again.
Lovely to speak to you again, Charles. Thank you very much.
Now, while the King was making his speech in the House of Lords, an MP was banged up in Buckingham Palace. It's an age-old tradition that when the King goes to Parliament, an MP is taken hostage to the palace, then released
upon the King's safe return. King Charles remarked about this during his state visit to the USA last month. Lewis Dennison reports.
An MP has been taken hostage at Buckingham Palace, but it's not as bad as it seems. Let me explain. The hostage taking is actually a centuries-old tradition from the times when the relationship between Parliament and the monarch was hostile. It happens during the state opening of Parliament when the monarch leaves the palace to go to Parliament to deliver the King's speech. Starting in the 17th century, the palace would take an MP hostage to ensure the King's return, and they'd only be released when the King got back safely. This year, the MP was Labour's Nick Dakin.
Well, there's a lot of laughing and jostling and you're the captive, ho, ho, ho. And then we sit down and we watch the state opening of Parliament on a big screen in Buckingham Palace and have a cup of tea and a very small shortbread biscuit.
And as Charles said during his state visit to the US recently,
these days we look after our guests rather well, to the point that they often do not want to leave.
And that's the Week in Holyrood from Caledonia Media. I'm Charles Fletcher. Do join me again at the same time next week, or at a time of your own choosing on SoundCloud or replay. Aiki ba.
Online at k107.co.uk and on air at 107 FM. This is K107 News.
So Keir Starmer's leadership remains under intense pressure, with Andy Burnham finding a route back to Parliament and Wes Streeting resigning from